Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/move to gas.
53106 is our text number. That'll cost you 30 cent, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. We are coming to you today from the National Ploughing Championships. We're just talking to Pat there about concussion in various sports industries. And what I did forget to mention was that Pat is here in conjunction with the National Dairy Council. Now, the National Dairy Council are working in conjunction with... God, my computer broke there. Sorry about that. In partnership with the NDC and Kappa Foundation to work together across a number of activities to promote and raise awareness on the importance of maintaining a healthy, balanced diet. Anyway, Mairead Lavery is here with us once again. Mairead, good afternoon. Are you well?
I'm after slip sliding my way in. It's kind of damp.
Yes, it is kind of damp.
It's pretty damp.
And we were saying just before we came on air that we couldn't remember the last time it was like this, but it's been a fair few
years. Yeah, there has been. But like when you're an adult, you'll get around it. But I never forget when the ploughing was in Limerick, 1991. And I think the last day was just a complete and utter deluge. And I had, of course, brought my 2-3-year-old twins along for the day.
As you do.
And I was so proud of them the last day, you know. They had their little red wellies and their little blue raincoats with little ducks along the bottom of it and hoods on them. And they were powerful. They were great. They'd held hands. They'd walked. They'd got their own way around the place for the whole day. And then we were heading for the car. And just before we left Big Field, there was a water point where you could wash your wellies, you know. There wouldn't have been as much railing and everything on the ground in those days. So anyway, we said over we went. And over we went to the tap, turned on the tap, kids walked forward, went down as far as their waists in water.
God, love them.
And because you see, you don't know the depth of a thing. And it's not as if it's on concrete, it's on soil. So it washes away. And like here at the minute, you've got the, you know, all the bark mulch. And you put your foot on it, you don't know how far you're going to go with it.
Yeah.
But the twins, we had to haul them back to the car and stripped them on the side of the road.
Oh, God,
because they would have
them.
Destroyed their face. But I just always imagined the shock on their face when in the wind and down the wind.
So, and there are people here with kids in buggies and stuff.
It's small babies,
brave soldiers.
I don't know. No, well, I mean, it's not as if we weren't warned. We were told we were going to get a fair amount of rain tomorrow. So, let's see how it pans out. But look, there's not only country dancing or country music going on. Mike Denver's going mad down there. There are absolutely hundreds and hundreds of people. The outdoor stage is packed. Richie Cavan is packed. You know, all of them, they're really, really busy. So farmers, they're used to the wet, but it does make it, you know, it's miserable when you're out.
It does make it a bit miserable, but it doesn't seem to be stopping anyone.
No, and actually the crowd hasn't thinned out, which I thought they would have by now. Mm. You know, get me out of the field before the tractor has to tow me out. So I tell people now, get a good feed before you leave here this evening, because you could be in the car for a while.
It took us about 2 hours to get down. I'm guessing it might take us a bit more than
that.
Didn't
arrive until the middle of the day.
Yeah, we were handy now.
We got in. We're staying down in Burr, and it took us about 20 minutes to get over here this morning, but we were here before 7. So so long days, you know.
Yeah,
but anyway, good
day.
fun.
And when was the president here? Was that yesterday?
The president was here yesterday, and he arrived on our stand anyway, got a standing ovation, sustained the applause. You know the polite applause?
Yes.
Versus the stuff that's meant?
Yeah.
And he got the stuff that's meant. And he made a very good speech that really kicked a lot of buttons in here, or pressed a lot of buttons. He talked about needing to see value, the value on the food chain. You know, you've got what the farmer produces. Everybody knows what he gets paid. You know, we know the price of milk. We've got the milk leagues. We know the price of cattle. We've got the factory leagues. So the prices are there and the costs are there. So people know there's great transparency. But between there and when it ends up in the supermarket shelf or on the consumer's table at home for their dinner, we don't know what happens to it. So he's actually asking for more clarity around the transparency of the value in the food chain, where the profits are being made. And he's actually said if it doesn't happen voluntarily, it should be legislated for. Now, an awful lot of farmers would agree with him on that.
Mm.
And so we'd all like to know Like for instance, there was a farmer told me yesterday morning about how 10 years ago he bought a tractor and it cost him 45 weanlands to do it. Now, that's not a new brand of money, in case you think. A weanland is, you know, last spring's calf. Mm. And what happens is they're suckler herds and the spring calves are reared by their mums and then they're sold off to be fattened further up the country. So they're, whatever, 8 or 9 month-old cattle. And that it took 45 of them to buy a tractor 10 years ago. It's now taking 85 to buy
the same spec tractor.
Now, the tractor price has gone up, but there's no way has the price of the farmer kept pace with what it is. And we have a Red Sea poll in Tomorrow's Farmers Journal, and the price that farmers get, naturally, it is one of their major, it's in their top three concerns. And, you know, you add Brexit is their number one concern because they really don't know what's going to happen there in terms of where borders are going to be and the ease of getting our product to the different markets and what's going to happen with the UK.
Yeah.
So between prices and Brexit, you know, they're two big imponderables. But Michael Dee, he really did hit a chord with people with both that. He then also talked about the need for services, and he talked about, you know, young people leaving rural Ireland because, you know, the jobs weren't there and that, you know, the services needed to go in, and that included really good broadband. And so it wasn't an option. It wasn't just optional that this should be part of what happens in rural Ireland, and the government should really go for it.
Mm.
So, yeah.
How would you do that, though? How would you regulate what the minimum price is for milk when you're buying it?
Well, it's not even that, but the transparency and what happens to it,
yeah.
what the cost base is. Like, farmers can tell you how much their egg eye, their meal bill, their silage, their diesel, their contracting prices. They can tell you about absolutely every bit along the chain. I mean, down to the detergent they might use in the milking parlour, the gloves, anything. They can tell you the cost of it, and they can identify that, yes, it costs 26 cent a litre or 27 cent a litre for the middle performers to produce a litre of milk, or it costs, you know, the really, really good ones might be able to do it in 18 or 16 cent a litre, and then the really poor ones could be costing them 35 cent a litre. But we actually know all of that information, so we know the price before it goes outside the door. So what happens after that? And you can't keep sweating the farmer every time. Now there is an upsurge in the price of butter at the moment, and it has gone up quite dramatically in price, but that's because butter is back in fashion with chefs, and it isn't kind of seen as like this bad awful stuff that you can't eat and shouldn't eat, you know. It's like
that's sugar now that'll kill you.
I mean, you know, butter as natural as you could get, I mean, probably saved an awful lot of people at different times, you know, in Ireland when butter and spuds were the only thing they had to eat.
Yeah.
And it didn't do them too much harm. But butter is back in favour and back in flavour. And, you know, the price has now helped really the milk price. And if you walk around the show here today and talk to the standholders, it's the guys who are in the dairy business who will keep investing. And that is the funny thing about farmers. They put the money back into the blessed farm the whole time. It's like worse than a, you know, what's this high maintenance woman?
Yes.
Every penny they have goes back. And that's, of course, back into all the businesses that you see here. I don't know, is there 1,800 exhibitors here today for the 3 days?
Mm.
They find it worth their while to travel, to put staff in here, to pay Anna May's charges, all the rest of it, because they're going to do the business. And farmers just keep putting the money back into the local economy, if they have any of it. And it's a pity more of them don't have a bit more of it.
Yeah. Now, you do, as you do every year, you did a Red Sea survey. What kind of things were you asking people?
Well, we're asking them loads of things. So, as I said, Brexit was our number one worry, followed by the prices they get, and followed by, would you believe it, climate change. The weather, of course, is on everybody's minds for the last 6 weeks, in particular, you know, when it hasn't been performing. So they're the top three, and like way ahead of any of the rest of them. They take up nearly 80% of what the concerns are. So, you know, getting a good deal in Brexit is really going to be important. But one of the other things I thought was very interesting in the survey was that when asked did they think that farming was boring, you know, that funny word, boring. Well, no, absolutely not. They didn't think it was boring at all. 80% of them thought it was anything but. But what they did think it was, though, about a third, that it was really unsociable. It was very isolating.
Mm.
And you know, that people were walking by themselves and walking, you know, lonely environment, nobody else to talk to maybe about the job or what they were doing.
It's interesting about the climate change as well, given that a farmer is very attuned to the weather. Yeah. And
well,
so there must be,
into, you know, this whole sustainability thing with Bord Bia. We're tracing our food miles. There's the awful research going into kind of making sure that what cattle are fed, maybe they'll burp less or there'll be less problem stuff coming out of their burps.
Yeah.
And I am a great believer, and you know, we're clever people. The world, you know, humans are clever and they're collaborative. And when they work together, they find solutions. So, I mean, it pays some people to just keep moaning the whole time, but find solutions instead of moaning.
Yeah, well, seaweed we were talking about there the other week might be the answer.
The other thing that we were looking at on the survey was the whole area of succession planning, you know, getting the next generation. There's more farmers aged over 70 than there are under 30 in the country.
Yeah.
Now, and, you know, farming accidents and all the rest of it, that's all part of that. So what they discovered is that since the last time we did the survey, which I think was either 2 or 3 years ago, it's gone up from 48 to 50% have a successor identified. Now, that's not a lot. You know, it's very, very little movement considering all the work that's going on in trying to get people to plan for the future and get younger people into the sector. And in terms of that, only... very few girls, 1 in 8.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. Was there still a bit of an attitude of, oh, I've no one to leave it to because I've no son?
Well, a bit of it, I'm afraid, 87% are successors of male, only 12%, and a couple of said they didn't know what way it was, but only 12% said the successor was going to be a female.
Yeah.
So that's a comparison to about, what, 17% of women who are involved in the sector on the whole, but then they're older women, and a lot of them have inherited because, you know, they're widows or... generally because they're widows, they inherit their husband's property. So, yeah, that isn't changing. Now, we did a survey ourselves a while back, and it's 74% of those said that who voted in it said that it would be the best kid. Whoever really was the interest would get the farm.
Yeah.
Now, you'd like to think that that's the way it would be. Mm. But at the moment, according to the Red Sea thing, it's anything but, with 87% saying it was a male successor.
Yeah, well, presumably, though, that'll change if there's no one to leave the
no
farm
to. Leave it
to
yeah, exactly. And, you know, there used to be a time where people kept going.
Yes.
You know.
Until it was... And now, the winners of the Farmyard of the Year Awards.
Yeah, we had those last night. They're great awards. I mean, look, it's awful important for people to have nice, clean, tidy farmyards. It means that you've got a... You know, you got somewhere safe to work. It's good for the industry. It looks good for people coming in. And the prize, the number one prize overall, went north for the very first time. It went up to County Down and the Lilburn Farm in Dromore. So it was actually, there was tears and everything last night because so many cases. The Farmyard Awards isn't something that happened. The family decided to enter like 3 months ago. You know, they've been and get everything in order. This is something that the families have been doing for generations. You know, father, grandfather, granddaughter, they've been keeping the place right, maintaining it, looking after about it, thinking about it. And then they win this, and it's a culmination, you know, for them. It's a real reward for maybe 2 lifetimes of work. And every year we find new entrants, and every year we find people who have a standard to match the previous year and before that. And it's fantastic to be able to recognise them and reward them.
Yeah, that is fantastic. Just one quick question someone's texted in. They say it's their first time with the ploughing, and they're just wondering about the sticks. Why do so many people walk around ploughing with a stick?
I don't know.
And I often, it's not like they're climbing a glacier or anything.
And they're like 15-year-olds. It's not as if they're 75-year-olds. They're 15-year-olds and they're going with their sticks. And, you know, they're selling them as a 3 for a 5 or something like that. I suppose if you're out herding cattle or if you're climbing mountains, maybe there might be a bit of use. But, you know, but you can go out to the next sycamore tree and take a bit off of it and you'd have it just as well. But, yeah, they have the sticks and they've had them for years. It's a bit like we have the road safety jackets, the high-vis jackets, and the queues for them go out the door. You just wonder, every house must have a press full of high-vis jackets at this stages, or Aldi Stetsons or whatever it is. Like, do people not get fed up collecting them, you know?
Well, there you go. There's your answer. It's a mystery. Mairead, thanks a million for coming into us. That's Mairead Lowry there from the Farmers Journal. Back in a couple of minutes.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank? Having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.